Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Michael Caine, Chief Human Capital Officer within the U.S. Department of Energy. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Barb Hudson. So, Mike, the department is facing significant operational challenges over the coming years. Those challenges require a flexible and responsive human capital support system that makes people and relationships integral to the daily operations of the department. Could you give us a sense of the overall energy strategic plan regarding human capital? What are some of the goals and objectives of the plan, and how do they connect to the overall department plan?
I talked a little bit about the fact that we're struggling with the maturity of the workforce. One of the things you'll see in the strategic plan that we have is valuing the workforce and treating each individual as an asset. And that asset is tied back to what does the program need at what skill level and when. So how are we doing workforce planning, and how does that workforce planning reflect that learning environment that I talked about? One of the things we're doing in energy right now is we're focusing in on how to make sure we translate that senior level information down. Secretary's a big proponent of doing that. As he'll tell you, he was a college professor for 30 years. He knows something about communicating and teaching. We're now standing up a program where our senior leaders are going to be teaching. We have the best nuclear physicists. We have some of the best energy lawyers in the business. We have people who have been on the ground in Russia and in other areas of the world dealing with nuclear materials. Who better to teach us about that? Who better to set that perspective? And more importantly, that sets up a cultural change within the agency that aligns individuals and people, that improves communication. And so it's all linked back to mission area, mission focus, how we improve that communication throughout the complex. We're also working on the fact that you can't do that just in a localized environment. You have to do it in an electronic world because we're spread all over the country and, in fact, all over the globe. So one of the things we're driving towards is using technology, using electronic mentoring, using VTC types of applications, using shared classroom environments and MP3 downloads of these type of education sessions to link people up so that what we have is the ability for an entry-level employee somewhere out in Albuquerque, New Mexico, to get to me and to say, I'm trying to understand something about accepted service hiring, not general schedule hiring. Help me. And they can get that information from me directly, or they can get it from files where I've talked about it in other types of environments.
I mean, your strategy has to be based on a reaction to something, some challenges that you're facing. And I want to touch a little bit on the external and internal human capital environment and challenges you're facing. And could you highlight some of those for us?
Well, certainly externally, we're facing the same challenge that many other agencies are. When you start hiring in very specialized areas, it's sometimes difficult to find those people and to bring them in with the pay scales that the government has. We have a number of accepted service authorities that Congress has given to us. We also have some pay authorities that are unique. We have a pilot program in the National Nuclear Security Administration that actually deals with paying specialized engineers more money. It's a pay-for-performance plan. It's a five-year pilot. It's in year four, and it's working quite well. It is one of those items that deals with generational issues as well, because when you start taking away the normal government step increase profile, you start talking about pay on an individual basis. People want to know, what do I have to do? What is expected of me? And it drives those discussions in a very direct way. We're using that experience as we in the department get ready to enter into the government's GEAR program. That's the goals, engagement, accountability, and results that John Barry has been talking about. And we're one of the pilot agencies. We're looking at how we get people to communicate. Back to the fact that we have wide generation differences, we need to be talking more about what expectations are and making clear whether those expectations are being met, not just on the supervisory side, but on the employee side. When you bring in a new generation, thinks differently, learns differently, you have to adapt your systems, true, but you also have to adapt your language and your culture and the way that you integrate and talk about progression, talk about performance. And so we're focused on doing that through the GEAR project. Some of the things we're doing are driving metrics into the program review processes, starting to use, well, it's not just cost and schedule. Where's your staffing? How well prepared are they? How healthy is the office itself? Are they trained up? Are they working well together? Are there enough people? And putting that in the actual process of technical review. It is a component of program success. Let's make it one.
So you had mentioned earlier about the strategic workforce planning that you've been involved with and the management of that. We know it's critical for you to ensure that that's properly aligned and it's current and evolving with all of the strategies and missions within the Department of Energy. Could you tell us a little more about your efforts to improve the hiring process within the Department of Energy, and how is that in accordance with the priorities of the President's hiring reform initiatives?
Well, certainly that's an important initiative, and one of the big things is time. Time is a driver, and when you slow it down, you lose opportunity, and we know that. And that doesn't make any difference whether you're hiring somebody just out of college or, frankly, whether you're hiring an experienced physicist. It is time that either meets the individual's requirement for deciding they want the job, or it can be time that tells them, I don't really think they're interested in me. So time is a critical factor. We have been driving the time down. We were at about 164 days. Can you imagine that? 164 days to fill the average job. We've now got that down to about 93 days. We're not really focusing in the senior levels in the last piece of that, which is when do they actually come on board. We've kind of thrown that measurement out because for us, we're usually recruiting people who are actively engaged in the work in senior levels. And we want them to finish that work and leave where they are with some closure. So we tend not to look at that piece. But on the entry level, we're driving very hard to make sure we turn those announcements around as quickly as we can and that we drive to closure to the point that we're actually having employees try to reach out and talk to the individuals right after we get that announcement closed, right after we get the selection made, so that they get a letter asking them to accept, they get a call from somebody in their office. We're also getting ready to roll out, as many other agencies are, what I call e-onboarding, that starts to take us away from having you report on day one and do what I call the blizzard of paperwork. Bring your ballpoint pen and get ready to have cramps. Do that all online before you get there and turn the first 3 or 4 days worth of coming in the building into, let's talk about the mission. Let's talk about the people you work with. Let's talk about what it's like to be in this building. Let's get down to why you're here.
So given the complexities of the Department of Energy, how does your organization evaluate the HR field performance and drive best practices across that entire community? Specifically, what steps are you taking to ensure that policies and procedures are implemented and monitored across such a vast and complex organization?
We use a variety of tools. We do use audits. We do peer-related audits, and I think everybody does those. My own philosophy on audits is audits are really an opportunity for improvement. They're not something that we want people to fear in the HR community. We want them to say, okay, the audit gives us a chance to look at what we do very well and to let other people hear about that. It gives us an opportunity to look at what we don't do well and determine whether that's a local activity or whether indeed that's something that's systemic in the way that we approach HR management in general. And we need to invest more money in training, or we need to build better systems, or we need to change the procedures that we put in place. What we've found so far is that when we approach it as being an audit, is there to tell us the quality of what we're delivering for the managers, for the frontline supervisors. When we look at an audit that way, we find ourselves saying, we can do better. And we do better because the audit points out to us where we're weak, not where we failed, where we're weak.
So developing future leaders is critical for a department with such an important mission as energy. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing to pursue succession planning and executive development? Basically, you know, what is the Department of Energy doing to ensure continuity of leadership through that planning and development?
We've got a number of both formal and informal programs. Some of our formal programs are actually targeted at the entry level. So we bring in people who have just come out of graduate school and they're on a fast-track program where they're exposed to many aspects in the department, not one program area, not one office, but a broader set of conditions and environments that they may work in. That's done purposely to give them a real operating environment portfolio, if you will, and at the same time, put them in a position where they are able to understand the complexities involved in these different sites and the work they do and how they do it. That works to a degree, but it's not the only answer. Because if all I do is orient you to what the department does, you don't get the actual fundamental skill and experience that builds the judgment. So we're focused, as I talked earlier, about having younger leaders locked in with mentors and coaches. And we actually encourage our leadership cadre to have more than one mentee. So you may have somebody who is, I have mentees, for example, who are technical people, and I'm talking to them about how to manage people better. They may also have other individuals who are technical managers who sharpen their skills in how to assess technical progress and how to deal with technical issues in decision making. So we try to have a broad-based set of communicators who can help people grow in multiple directions. The other thing we're struggling with right now is, I talked about the complexities of the mission. How do you move people across those mission areas? Now think about that for a minute. Nuclear weapons and renewable energy technologies like solar, okay? Engineering, program management, finance, budget, but completely different philosophies and cultures. Our objective is to get those on a Z path, whereas people come in, they move back and forth because they learn different skills and different types of leadership attributes in each one of those areas. And it's important to us that they have that, because in the end result, we have to come together as a department and we have to decide with the secretary what the priorities are and what the budget investments are going to be. And the more we understand about where programs are, the more we can work together to do that in a seamless manner.
It's the benefits of the enterprise viewpoint, too, that you get from cross-training like that. The thing I want to switch focus on is the performance culture that you're pursuing within the department. And given the vast mission set that you have, how are you streamlining and consolidating your performance management system? And could you give us a sense of some of the success stories that you have in this area?
Well, I talked about one of them, the National Nuclear Security Administration's pay band system, which is a performance-based system, is working very well. It's encouraging broad communication. There is a lot more discussion around expectation and a much deeper appreciation for how work is prioritized and addressed in that system from what we can see today. As I said, it's a pilot, and we'll know in several years how it really matures as people move through the system. The second piece of that is we've gone to an electronic performance system. That speeds communication. It actually improves it. It's one thing if I'm sitting here putting it down on paper and I've got to call you in my office, but we're now finding you're on the road traveling. We need to get that appraisal in place. We can send it to you. You can send it back to us. We can have an electronic dialogue about it, and we can get it in place. Employees feel good about that. Supervisors feel good about that. HR people feel great about it because they've gotten everything in place. More importantly, there's not confusion. Because they can edit and have a dialogue online and go back and forth and make those changes, they do. They don't say, well, I've got it all nice within the lines, and so let's don't change it. We know what it means. They have that dialogue. And so that system is the basis for what we're using as we move in to that performance pilot. One of the other things we're doing in performance is we're forcing more conversations. So we're taking what we learned in the NNSA pilot and we're moving that over. We're saying we're going to have more than the typical three conversations. I set it, I check it, I close it. We're going to have all discussions in between there that are progress reviews so that you know you're progressing well or no, we need more attention here. Well, I think I'm doing it okay. Well, let's talk about why it's not now. Let's don't wait till we get down to the mid-year and say we're not there. That is going to help employees because it's going to give both sides a voice to say, you know what, I don't have the training I need or I'm not getting the guidance I need. I'm not getting the help.
I was just wondering, given the size of the Department of Energy and the various mission sets, which you've done a wonderful job of articulating, what is the major challenge of fostering a performance culture in such a huge agency? And more particularly, how are you using sort of different technologies or social media to get that message out and to instill it?
Well, you hit it. Communication is the big piece. And if you look at the Department of Energy, one of the first things you see on the employee value surveys is we've got scores that are really worth watching from a management perspective in the area of communication. Employees are telling us there's not enough. There's so much going on here. There is so much happening. We're not getting everything we want. So what we've got to do is focus on how do we get that information out. Social media is one way to do it. The department has rolled out a program. You can go on site and you'll see it. And it tells the employees where everything is, what's going on. And it's everything from technical achievements to me singing Single Ladies at charity drives. So it's got something for everybody. And the bottom line is what we're seeing is employees are saying, okay, I'm able to read this and now I'm able to go back and ask somebody, what is this? It's starting that two-way street. And that's really what the secretary wants to drive to, communication that is a two-way street, collaborative discussion that wells from not the top down, but from every direction, that kind of constant availability that I talked about when we first started.
In a sense, the size, the physical size of the department isn't really necessarily when you go with that approach, it's not an impediment.
No, it's not. And that's the beauty of technology. You can get online and see exactly what happened 2 hours ago. And when you're in California from Washington, that's a big deal.
What is the U.S. Department of Energy doing to develop future leaders and pursue a strategic workforce planning approach? We will ask Michael Caine, Chief Human Capital Officer within the U.S. Department of Energy, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.